Welcome to the podcast of Grace Covenant Church, where we are transformed by God's grace, connected through relationships, and committed to service.
Well, good morning. A number of years ago, I had a life-changing call. It's kind of late at night, and a girl called me from the youth group, and she was attending college now, and she was pretty excited, and she's a sweet girl, a very sweet girl. She used to babysit for us. I would let her raise my children. Okay, she's that sweet, but I wouldn't want to be in a chemistry lab with her as a partner, if you know what I mean. I wouldn't even want to be in the lab with her, you know. Just, she had to work really hard for her grades, and she had a hard time paying attention sometimes to stuff, and she was a sweet girl. Anyway, she's riding to school with a friend, or just kind of bumming rides together to get to campus and from here to where she was going, and it was a 2 or 3 hour drive, and she said, the guy that was driving, the guy in the car with her, just kept asking her questions about her faith, about the nature of God and how you could believe that God even exists and what kind of proofs there were for his existence. And then it got more and more narrow. What about Christianity and the claims that he had and how would you believe that? And, you know, he was fairly antagonistic to some of her core values, and he just kept pressuring her on these many questions. It was just a barrage all the way to campus for 2 hours. And so, you know, when she called, I said, well, gosh, I'm sorry about that. I mean, how'd that go? She goes, are you kidding? I answered them all. I mean, I nailed that thing. And you know what? I didn't even think I was listening all that time in Sunday school class when we were up in the attic. I honestly didn't think I knew that stuff. And so when I hung up the phone and turned to talk to Melinda, I said, hey, that changed. I mean, it works, honey. It works. This faith is defensible, and anybody can learn how to defend their faith. That's kind of the theme of our whole series together with Think It Through. And I want you guys to leave today with confidence that what you believe is a reasonable set of things to believe. They involve the miraculous, sure. They involve some of the kind of a mind-blowing experiences of what's real and true, but it's reasonable. It's reasonable. Today, I'm bringing a friend here. We're going to talk about philosophy. This is Dr. Rob Coons. He's at the University of Texas. He's been there for 24 years. He went to Michigan State and then Oxford and UCLA. Tell us about your family a little bit.
Married my wife, Debbie, for 31 years. Uh-huh. She's had 3 kids. She's been a great wife and great mother for the kids. She really keeps me grounded in everyday life. The very first philosopher, Thales, is supposed to have fallen into a well because he was so absent-minded and thinking about philosophy. So Debbie's kept me from falling in any wells in the last 31 years. Yeah. I appreciate that. And the kids are doing great. The youngest, Ben, just graduated yesterday afternoon. So we're done.
Yeah.
That's great.
I was at the graduation with my daughter. Ben spoke because he was the valedictorian in Westwood.
Yeah, very proud of him.
When he went up to speak, they started going, Coons. He's a rock star. My daughter can dress better than your son.
That's
just
true.
Saying that.
That's true.
Okay.
No, she's very cute.
Listen, I thought I'd introduce our time together with a video. This is how I feel like I'm coming to this.
How's it going? I'm Bill. This is Ted. We're from the future.
Socrates.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with him.
All we are is dust in the wind, dude.
Dust? When?
Dude. Himes, Udenano, Blanconiotos. Ha!
Let's get out of here, dude.
It could look like that today.
Too much like a typical day at UT classroom, actually. I've been there, I'm afraid.
Well, let's talk about philosophy, the introduction of philosophy. Tell us a little bit about about philosophy and Christian philosophy especially.
Yeah, so one thing I wanted to start with was the idea of the place of philosophy in God's providence. So, you know, as Christians, I think we should believe that the Roman Empire was providentially put in place by God in that period of time, because what the Romans did was they created this system of roads. They're great engineers, roads and bridges, and they cleared the Mediterranean of piracy, and they created a single system of law. And then when you read in Acts about Paul and his missionary journeys, we maybe don't realize how amazing that is, the fact that he could just get in a boat and start sailing around the Mediterranean and going to, from city to city, and you know, because of the roads and because of the transportation system that existed. So that enabled the gospel to spread like wildfire, literally, across the Mediterranean world. And my view is that philosophy, Greek philosophy in particular, was also set in place by God's providence. It created a network of intellectual roads that enabled the gospel, again, to spread like wildfire through those cultures. The philosophers, the Aristotle, Plato, the Stoics, and so on, had created a climate of opinion in which, and a way of thinking, that was really receptive to the gospel and enabled the message to get across. Now, unfortunately, in our modern world, in the last 200 or 300 years, philosophy has been creating a lot of obstacles to the gospel. So it's been sort of tearing up that system of roads and impeding the spread of the gospel. There's two versions of that philosophy I might mention. They're just typical of this. One is in what in philosophy we call idealism. It probably should better be called ideaism. It's the idea that that all I can really know is my own mind, my own thoughts, my own consciousness. It sort of keeps us trapped within ourselves. And you can see how this is receptive to our culture when you look at movies like The Matrix and others that suggest that maybe this is all a dream, maybe there's nothing more to life than just our consciousness. And then the other sort of philosophy that's very influential in our world today is materialism, which in a way goes to the opposite extreme, right? Idealism tries to teach us there's nothing but my own consciousness, it's just my mind, it's just me, myself. And materialism, on the other hand, tries to get us to forget that we have minds altogether, that there isn't any consciousness. We're just a bunch of molecules on the make. It's just, you know, physical stuff going on, and tries to reduce everything to that. And both of these philosophies, in contrast to the ancient Greek sort of philosophies, you know, they create obstacles because they suggest that we can't get in touch with the real world if we're idealists, or that the real world is completely devoid of meaning and purpose and good and truth. And all
things like materialism, things like thought and even love are just chemical reactions inside a brain. There's no mind.
Right.
Those sorts of things.
Right, exactly.
Philosophy answers the big questions, right? I mean, that's its purpose. It's to pursue the wisdom of the bigger questions in life.
Yeah, when people ask me what philosophy is, usually what I answer is something like this. It's the great conversation that was started by Socrates, like in the video, and a few other friends in Athens, and it's been going strong ever since. And it's a conversation. The thing that distinguishes it is it's a conversation about all the big questions of life. You know, who, where did I come from? Who are we? What is it that we're supposed to be, that we can hope for? What's the ultimate good? And what's wrong with us? Why aren't we there? And what can we do to fix us? So, I mean, the great thing about being a Christian in philosophy is that those are the same questions to which Christianity has the answers, right? I remember there was a bumper sticker a few years back that said, Jesus is the answer. But then, you know, what's the questions, right? And that's what philosophy provides us with. So the great thing for being a Christian in philosophy is that you don't have to work really hard to get the gospel into the conversation. Right? Like your friend driving the car. I mean, the non-believer was asking these philosophical questions. That just opens the door to communicating the gospel. So it's a great privilege to be in a secular setting in philosophy where these questions are naturally arising, and then we can give the Christian answers.
Right. Like one of the big questions is, where do we come from? You know, a couple weeks ago we had Dr. Walter Bradley here, our friend from Baylor University, and he was a scientist, and we talked about the limitations of science. It can't answer that question, where do we come from?
Yeah.
Here's a little clip from Yoda here, right? How'd the Force get here? Explain that you cannot. So that's a philosophical question. Even Yoda knows that. So that's the place of philosophy. And a bigger question or a question like that also is who is man? And that specific question certainly has extreme views, Christianity being an extreme view about the dignity of man and atheistic view being another extreme. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the Bible is, I think, the greatest charter there's ever been for human reason. It says that God is a rational God, like in Isaiah 1:18, where he says, come, let us reason together. And that theme, you know, runs through the whole Bible, the book of Job and so on. God is a rational God. When Christ is called the Logos, the Word of God, in the Greek, the Logos also can mean logic, reason, accounts, so arguments even. So God's a rational God, and he's created us in his image, created us in order to understand the world he's made, understand ourselves, even to some extent understand him. And so Christians have a basis, really, for believing in the possibility of philosophy and the possibility of science and other kinds of the pursuit of truth that an atheist or a materialist, for instance, doesn't have. So for the atheist, the human brain is just a bunch of molecules, again, produced by evolution for no reason other than the purpose of reproducing those genes. So if we stumble into any truth whatsoever from that point of view, it's just some kind of weird fluke. It doesn't really make any sense. Right. So my non-Christian colleagues in philosophy have this problem all the time. We're trying to use our minds to understand reality, and yet they can't explain why that's possible. This doesn't even really make sense from their point of view. Right. So they have to they either give up on philosophy, which sometimes happens. You know, they get so enmeshed in materialism, they just say, yeah, why even think about those things? Let's just forget it. Or if they keep doing philosophy because it's so attractive and so exciting, you know, again, they just have to shut down certain questions.
Right.
How is it possible that we humans can do this? Whereas Christians, we can understand it. And so, again, it's a great opportunity, I think, for Christians to let our works, good works, shine, you know, for God's glory, as Jesus says. You know, not just obviously our social action is important, but it's also important for us to display the fact that Christianity enables us to be thinking people,
right,
rational people, and to do so with a certain kind of confidence and enthusiasm that the atheist doesn't have.
Like Paul at Mars Hill, he comes to those men that are thinking men, and they have home court advantage,
yeah,
but he brings classic Greek philosophy to show that there must be an uncaused cause that's even greater than their gods.
Right. I mean, that's a perfect illustration of what I was talking about. Again, the idea of Greek philosophy as an open door. Because here were all these people, they met on this hill, and they were just asking these big questions, and anybody could come and give their answer and explain why. I mean, that's exactly the kind of openness that made the gospel succeed. And so Paul comes into that situation, and he doesn't just, you know, quote the Old Testament to them, because they don't know, you know, Moses from a hole in the wall. So he actually appeals to their own philosophical poets, like Epimenides and Aratus, right? So when he says things like, in him we live and move and have our being, that's a quotation from a philosophical poet, or for we are his offspring, quoting from another philosophical poet. So he's appealing to the philosophy that's already there to make the case that there is a God, that the created world displays God's nature, as he explains in Romans 1.
Now, you see this in school, right, when you're teaching classic Western or classic Greek philosophy?
Yeah, so I teach a lot of ancient philosophy, where it's just mostly Plato and Aristotle.
Right.
And I just last semester, I had a student come up to me after the semester and said, you know, when I came to this class, my Christian faith was basically gone. I'd lost it. And, you know, reading these philosophers has completely revived it. I'm you know, going back to church again. And it's revived my Christian faith. And I said, you know, I didn't talk about Christianity at all. Right. I was just talking about Plato and Aristotle. But we were talking about the fact that you can know the world. We talked about the fact that there are these virtues, and that the only way to succeed as a human being is to fulfill these virtues. And that's enough, really, because once you see that, then you see, yeah, well, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm not wise and courageous and just, and I'm a sinner, and, you know, how then am I going to solve these problems? And it's a perfect illustration. Jay Budiszewski has exactly the same experience. He teaches, he's a Christian, he teaches philosophy at UT as well. Very similar experience where he's teaching Aristotle about virtues. And in one of his discussions, people in his class said, well, wait a minute, if this is true, then we're like sinners. You know? And he said, well, yeah, I guess that's right. It's a tremendous opportunity.
Well, so, I mean, an application for us then is to know philosophy, right? I mean,
I think so, yeah. You know, I mean, if we, obviously we have to know the Bible, right? We have to concentrate on that. But if we don't know, if that's all that we know, then when we or our children are sort of thrust out there in the world and we have to deal with all these alien philosophies, we have to work really hard to make the connections. And I think at the same time, it's not going to work if we just study the Bible and then we jump to all the modern misconceptions. Because what you need is a bridge between the two.
Right.
And the ancient philosophers, both the non-Christians like Plato and Aristotle and Cicero, and also some of the Christian thinkers of antiquity like Augustine and Thomas Aquinas and others, and some contemporary people as well, help us to provide that bridge. Right? So we sort of understand how it is that Christianity answers these classical philosophical questions, and then you can deal with the modern aberrations and errors and so on with that kind of setting.
Rob and I went through some books that we have mutually read and enjoyed and would be great entry-level books. One would be by Dr. Peter Kraft at Boston College called Between Heaven and Hell. It's a very funny kind of book in that, oddly enough, Aldous Huxley, John Kennedy, and C.S. Lewis actually all died on the same day in history. And so they're caught in between heaven and hell, and they have to argue their various worldviews to try to determine what is their ultimate fate here. It's a fascinating work.
So it's in a dialogue form, just like Plato's works were.
Right, so it's fun. And then another one is by J.P. Moreland, who's out at Biola and Talbot, Love Your God With All Your Mind, another excellent work. This is more of a traditional read. It's a great place to start as well. And these are great men, and they love God, so.
Yeah, Moreland makes a real good case for the role of philosophy in the Christian life.
Absolutely. So, okay, and next one I want to talk about is the power of a Christian worldview. When we spoke over various meals, you talked about some experiences in your own university, but also just what does Christianity have compared to other worldviews that others don't?
Yeah. Yeah, the thing that I've come to appreciate more and more over the years is the fact that Christianity, of all the different philosophies and theologies of the world, it's the one that's really uniquely, internally consistent and coherent and provides a set of answers to these big questions that make sense.
Internally consistent means it's not self-contradictory.
Yeah, it doesn't contradict itself. So you can think it through without having to run up against a wall where you just have to stop thinking or where you have to believe two impossible things at once.
Right.
Christianity never asks you to do that. You can really just think it through and it all fits together in a coherent way. So it explains, you know, we've been talking about the nobility of man. Why are we able to understand things at all? Well, we're created in God's image. Yeah, but why is the world so screwed up? Because of the fall, right? So we get both those aspects there. We can understand, I was talking a little bit, I mean, the first section we were actually talking about epistemology, I'll give you a long word here, which is the philosophical study of knowledge. How is knowledge possible? Well, because God, the creator, is a rational being. His knowing is the basis of everything, and we know by participating in his knowing. We sort of follow along after his thoughts. What's morality? Well, again, God is goodness, God is love. For us to be morally good is for us to imitate or to reflect his goodness in our lives. What is morality? Well, that's based on the commands of a loving God who wants us to realize our potential.
Right.
It all makes sense, right? I mean, if you're not a Christian, you know, you might say you either have to deny there is any such thing as morality, as a lot of philosophers do, or you have to say, well, this moral stuff just sort of pops out of nowhere. And it's important, and I can't say why, but it is.
Tell a story about you being on that panel discussion. It really illustrates that well.
So I was invited by a dorm at UT to be part of a panel discussion on different worldviews. I think there were four of us. So there was me representing the Christian view. There was one of my colleagues who was an atheistic existentialist. There was someone who represented some sort of Eastern, kind of a mishmash of various Eastern religions, I think, and then a kind of postmodernist, right, deconstruction and all that sort of thing. And so we were supposed to talk about our different worldviews and, you know, why they might be true. And the thing that came out of the discussion was I was the only one who had a worldview, right? That actually, you know, that what I actually said, here's what I think and here's how it all fits together. Everybody else on the panel said, life doesn't make any sense to me. I have no idea why we're here, what we're doing, and here's how I cope with that. And that was pretty much their
story.
Stay
distracted.
Yeah, right. You know, or sort of make it into some heroic thing that I can somehow live despite the fact that the world doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
So, you know, that's that kind of experience that should give us compassion, really, for the non-believer.
Right.
To realize, you know, what a terrible thing it is to live in a world that you think doesn't make any sense.
Right.
That you think is just all blank.
Right.
And I was just thinking, as we're sitting here, about our kids and, you know, just the miracle it is that when you have, you know, God gives you a child, you know. And you know, the atheist has no one to thank for that.
Right.
I mean, this is a wonderful blessing, but there's no blesser.
Right.
And so, yeah, it creates these incredible internal conflicts from the atheist point of view. Whereas for a Christian, it all makes sense.
Well, in your own story about not being afraid of pursuing truth and knowledge, or even particularly philosophy. I mean, there's a lot of people today, especially in Christian homes, that would be scared to death to send their child to the University of Texas to get a degree in philosophy because of it would ravage their souls, you know. But you had a contrarian view to that.
Yeah, so I remember still pretty vividly when I was an undergraduate up at Michigan State, and I found myself in a couple of philosophy classes for no particular reason. The advisor had suggested I do it, and I found I really, really interested. Was really interested in it, but you know, I was a Christian, and so I thought, you know, maybe this is a risky thing for me to do. I mean, maybe I should just avoid philosophy, study physics or economics or something that's kind of safer, right? Because who knows what I'll find out there in that philosophical world? Maybe I'll find stuff that will really upset my faith. And I thought about that and prayed about it. I thought, you know, that's not really a very faithful attitude to have, to think that, gee, there may be some scary stuff out there. I don't want to know it. I mean, if God really is the God of the universe, right, and he's made us to try to understand it, and he's revealed himself to us in the Bible, we shouldn't be afraid of anything, right? And so I said, no. In fact, for me, it was an act of faith to continue to do philosophy, to think, to trust that God would see me through it.
Right.
And he did, you know? And you know, I've spent 30 years in a way, because most of my colleagues in philosophy are not believers.
Right.
I mean, there's more than you would think. About 20% of the profession is Christian, actually, which is pretty high. But nonetheless, most of them are non-believers. And they're sure that the Christianity is false. You know, they're sure there's no God. So I've been spending 30 years trying to figure out, where's the argument, right, that convinces you? Where's this article that was published that demonstrated that Christianity is false? And it's not there. They don't have any reason. Most of them have not given 5 minutes thought to this stuff.
Right.
It's all just a cultural assumption that they buy into.
But there's a considerable amount of peer pressure on you. I've watched your career over the years with the fashionable, you know, beliefs of the season, and you have to stand stalwart in that.
Right. So that's the great danger, right? And you do need to find, and it's probably not just true in philosophy, but in other fields, you do need to find other believers who are willing to stand with you so that you can stand against all that peer pressure.
Right.
I mean, I remember when Alvin Plantinga, who was a great philosopher, was at Calvin College and then later at Notre Dame, who came to UT, and actually I heard him first at Oxford, and you know, it was just so encouraging the way that he was not shy about admitting that he's a Christian,
right.
and he's a great philosopher, and people respect him as that. And so, we need that kind of help, because otherwise, it is easy in lots of subtle ways to kind of buy into the thinking that's out there.
There's crazy thinking out there. If everybody believes it, it makes it feel, you feel like the one that saying the king has no clothes.
Yeah.
Zany. So let me show you a video. It's probably not too far from what you've experienced.
Did you get it?
Yeah. I did, I felt it. It's hard to describe.
Very, very good. Your turn.
Now.
Not so hard.
Sorry.
Now. 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 Now.
You get it?
Yeah, you stop thinking.
Yes, it's fantastic.
It's like I'm here, but I'm not. So I'm not here. It's just, I don't know. Do it one more time. It's like I'm a rock or a dish of mold. I'm whatever else is around, so I'm free to just exist.
This is the answer. We just have to be this all day, every day.
It's the answer.
I mean, there's entire departments in the philosophy department just dedicated to that nothingness.
And yeah.
You have to say, excuse me, I know getting hit is fun, but there's got to be more to life than this.
Yeah, you know, in the Screwtape Letters, C.S. Lewis's book, if you read that, especially that first chapter where Screwtape's writing to his junior
Wormwood.
Yeah, Wormwood, who's foolishly trying to get his disciple to read a bunch of arguments against God's existence. And Screwtape says, no, stay away from reason and arguments, because who knows where that's going to lead.
Right.
What you want to do is you want him to get him embedded in a culture. You want him to get him to just accept that certain things are out of date, and you know we modern people don't think that anymore.
Right.
That's the kind of thing that the devil uses, not thinking. Thinking is his enemy.
Let's look at the last one of the bigger questions again, is how philosophy serves theology, and particularly philosophy helps determine what's right and what's real, and especially in the nature of God. You know, when we talk about the nature of God, philosophy helps us to be able to say God can't be that way, or God must be a certain other way. Now, that certainly shows itself up in the problem of God and evil. Right, philosophy puts boundaries on the description and the definition of God that says he can't be thus and such, and he must be this way. How does that work in the problem of evil?
Yeah, so here I think what we can talk about is the value of Christian philosophy. That is,
okay,
when Christians are doing philosophy, what can we then bring back to the church?
Right.
And I think there is some things that we can add. In Francis Schaeffer, I think it's in The God Who Is There, he's giving one of his lectures, and a pastor in the audience says, you know, from what you've taught me, I'm now able to worship God better, which is kind of a surprising thing, because you might think I'm better able to communicate the gospel to non-believers, or I'm better able to understand things, but I'm better able to worship God. And I think, you know, to me that makes sense, because philosophy helps us to understand that God, well, it keeps us from having too small a picture of God.
Right.
As though God is just some kind of cosmic, you know, busboy who answers my requests and so on. That's sort of all he does. Or that he's just our God. He's part of our little story here as Christians in North America or something like that. What philosophy tells us is, no, look, God is the first cause of everything. He is being itself. Like in Exodus 3 when God says, I am that I am. He's existence itself. And that means that everything that's good and everything that's real and perfect is already in God to the ultimate degree. Right, so goodness, God just doesn't happen to be good. He's goodness itself. He's the very essence of goodness.
He must be good.
Yeah, I mean, so to suppose that God might not be good in some way is like supposing that you might run across a four-sided triangle or a circle that isn't equidistant from its center or something like that. It's absolutely inconceivable. When John says that God is love, from a philosophical point of view, I don't read that as some kind of metaphor or hyperbole. He means God is love. The very reality of love is what God is. And so for God to be unloving, for God not to care about us, is inconceivable. God is truth. So for him to be untrue to himself, for him not to fulfill his promises, let's say, impossible. Absolutely impossible. We don't have to rely just on what we might call the inductive evidence of what he's done so far. We can understand that that's how he has to be in his very essence in order for him to be the explanation, the ultimate explanation for reality. So I think it's a very positive thing.
So, you know, at the 2 o'clock in the morning phone call, when evil does, not ring your bell,
yeah,
you don't have to debate in your mind whether or not God is good or evil, whether he's somebody to pursue at this difficult time.
Yeah.
He has to be loving. He has to be good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it's not surprising to us that suffering happens, because we have the example of Jesus. So we understand that in this world, in this fallen world, you know, suffering and hard times will come. But at the same time, you know, that doesn't shake our confidence that God is good, that God is love.
Right. And then another big question is the defense of God himself.
Yeah.
Richard Dawkins is a huge atheist today. He's the junkyard dog of atheism.
Yeah.
Often quoted, popular writer. How does philosophy respond to Dawkins?
I even read his book. So if you were to take he talks about the real philosophical questions in about 3 pages in the book, to be honest, what I would consider philosophy. And if someone were to hand in those 3 pages and I didn't know it in one of my undergraduate courses, C minus at best.
Right.
I mean, it's just, I'm serious. You know, it's just ignorant. He hasn't taken the time to try to understand the sources he's talking about at all.
Right.
He rips them out of historical context without understanding the debate that they're a part of. His arguments are just terrible. They're not logical.
You've written a book on logic, haven't you?
Yeah.
So,
I teach logic. We've done. Yeah, no, it, it's,
So he might be a very good scientist.
It's embarrassing, really.
Right. He might be a good scientist in his field, but in philosophy and in logic and even quoting historical philosophers, he's dreadful.
Terrible. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So I know he's a problem for a number of people, so I would recommend this book. It's a short little book. It's by the McGraths, the husband-wife team, Alistair and Jean. And this is a very nice book in that McGrath is at Oxford with Dawkins, and he's quoting other atheistic Oxford professors that cannot, they don't even want to spend time with Dawkins because his reasoning is so flawed and his anger is so violent. So this is a great place to start if you have some issues and people are quoting Dawkins a lot. This is a fabulous book. It's short, it's readable, and he quotes great sources. So, well, tell us about what the future looks like in philosophy and in the universities.
So I actually have some pretty good news here. I mean, if you compare the course of philosophy in my lifetime, it's gone in directions that are very positive from a Christian point of view. You go back to the 50s or 60s, I mean, it was like the Sahara Desert, theologically speaking. The debate back then was, does it even make sense to say that God might exist? And that was the debate. Now, about a third of the, like I say, a quarter, a third of the profession is Christian. But even among non-Christians, there's been a turn away from this kind of super scientism, where science is everything, back to some of the classical philosophical questions. Where does everything come from? Who are we? How is knowledge possible? And those sorts of classical philosophical questions. And so and Christian philosophers in the U.S. and in Britain are very much involved in this process, in this move towards reviving classical philosophy. And so I'm hopeful that we're going to see, in God's providence, a revival of a kind of Aristotelian, Platonic kind of perspective, at least as a viable option, which, again, will open up some of those clogged roads within the Western world to enable the gospel to get out more effectively.
Sure.
And then we see similar sorts of things happening in other fields. I mean, physics, again, in the last 50 years, it's been a real revolution. Big Bang, the universe actually has a beginning,
right?
Which begs the question, well, who started it? And why is it so well crafted for life, as Dr. Bradley talked about last week? Biology, as you know, the Darwinian model that everything ultimately is a matter of chance, is coming up against more and more difficulties. I mean, I really think that in the next 10 or 20 years, people are going to have to give that up, and they're going to have to start understanding the world in a more metaphysical way, right? That there's a real difference between living things and non-living things.
Right.
They're not just molecules arranged in a certain way. And even feels like economics and political theory, they're getting away from thinking about human beings as mere income maximizers. They're getting back to some of the classical questions about justice and virtue. And again, once you start talking on those issues, you're opening up the door to the Christian answers to those questions.
Right and wrong. What's right?
Yeah. I mean, economics is an interesting example. Economics is actually the field where have historically been the fewest Christians involved. And I think, you know, because if you look at everything in terms of the bottom line, then all the spiritual questions never even arise.
Right.
And that's beginning to change there as well. So I think a lot of positive developments are taking place.
Well, Dr. Kuntz, thank you very much for joining us, and I appreciate your work.
My pleasure.
With us.
Yeah.
He may look like a mild-mannered man, but he's not. I've been watching his career at the university for years, and he's extremely courageous. He has stepped out for the Christian faith and for Christian liberties and for just general civilization numerous times and been all but alone on a number of those occasions. So when I think of the University of Texas, honestly, I think of Rob Kuntz, and I think about praying for the faculty. One of the things I'd like for you guys to leave with in our series is coming to an end here is to be praying for the faculty all around the country, but especially at schools like the University of Texas. When you drive by the campus and you see the stadium and you see the tower, pray for the Christian faculty that they would be honored, that they would be courageous, and they would find a community with each other. And you guys just keep up the great work. You guys keep it up. This is kind of a verse that's inspired the whole series itself, that we are always be prepared to give an answer to everyone. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks to give a reason for the hope that you have, and do so with gentleness and respect. Let me just end with just a few quick words. A number of years ago, almost 21 years ago, I was working with a radio station here in town, KLBJ, the AM radio station. I was involved with a program called Christian Encounter. And it was a call-in radio show where we would have hosts like Dr. Coons, and we had Dr. Bradley and Plantinga, and in every field of science and philosophy and in the hard sciences like astronomy and physics and chemistry. We even had a couple of really consistent atheists. They were great guests. And we would have just the general public in Austin call into the station, and people could ask any question they wanted. And after doing this for 2 years, but after about 4 months, I started realizing, wait a minute. There's nothing out there. Like you were saying, there's nothing behind the curtain that we need to be afraid of. And I went to one of the guys, the primary interviewer in this radio show, and I said, there's no Achilles heel to the faith, right? I was relatively new in my faith. He goes, no, don't you worry. You can ask anyone any question. It'll get an answer. And the answer's going to lead to Jesus. So if there's an application for this whole series itself on Think It Through, know this. That Jesus is the truth, and the truth will set you free. And you can be confident about that. You could be that girl getting a ride to school knowing that there's no threat to your faith. God's the author of truth, and he gives it to us. Pursue that truth. Let me kind of close our time together with a word of prayer, and I'll pray for Rob and the faculty at the university, and we'll ask God to bless you guys. Lord, I do lift up Rob Coons to you and the work he's done over these many years and how he stood up for you and causes the freedom of speech and the innocence that's being lost in some of the things that are going on at the university and how he stood against those. Lord, I'd ask that you'd bless him and bless him indeed, that you protect his family, that you would cause other faculty member to come to know you, and that Dr. Coons could be part of making them strong believers. I'd ask for the fraternity of believers at the University of Texas and the other universities around, that the guys would and gals would come together and they would be encouraged by one another. We'd ask that you'd be pleased in the way a new generation is being educated, that they would pursue the truth and follow that truth at all costs. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
For more information about Grace, visit our website at grace360.org.